acknowledge his suggestion before moving on. "One more thing," she said. "You'll see you have several blocks of free time. They're highlighted in yellow. You are, of course, free to spend that time however you wish, but," she jabbed a finger at his chest, "if I find out you've so much as stepped foot near a sports car while you're here, I will personally fetch a Japanese steel knife from the kitchen and castrate you with it. Scarlet is my witness. Do you understand?" She punctuated her question with additional jabs. I hid my grin behind my fist while Asher raised his hands in surrender.
"Sports car, Japanese steel, castration,"
he nodded.
"Understood."
"Good." Sloane dropped her arm, took a deep breath, and smoothed a hand over her flawlessly tailored skirt suit. "Scarlet, it was lovely to meet you. Asher, stay out of trouble." With that, she left. Her heels clacked against the marble floors of the suite's entryway before the door opened and closed, and silence descended once more.
"You could look a little less entertained by her threat,"
Asher said dryly.
"Castration would be unfortunate for both of us."
"Yeah, but it'd be worse for you," I offered a cheeky smile. "At least I have the dildos to take over the—" "Ah!" I squealed when Asher swept me up with a growl and carried me to the bedroom. "Let me down, you Neanderthal!" I pounded a fist against his back, but I was laughing when he finally laid me down on the bed. He hovered over me, his face creased with a mock scowl.
"What were you saying about dildos?"
"That they're one of mankind's greatest inventions." I wrapped my arms around his neck and kissed away his adorably boyish pout. "But they're not as good as something else I can think of."
"That's the right answer."
His lips lingered on mine for a moment before he pulled back and examined me.
"How was the plane ride? Do you want me to draw you a bath?"
Warmth dripped from my chest into my stomach. "It was okay." 11 hours was a long time to spend in the air, but the private jet's luxurious amenities prevented any bad flare-ups. The seats had pressure relief cushions, and I could walk around and stretch my legs whenever I started getting stiff. They even had a heated massage chair on board. "I can take a bath later. Right now, I need to eat. I'm starving." While Asher ordered us room service, I explored our home for the next 3 days. The suite was twice the size of my flat in London. Its living room boasted a home theatre system and a state-of-the-art universal remote, while the lavish dining room was big enough to accommodate 8. Delamonte soaps and gels lined the bathroom's double marble vanity, and a wall of one-way tinted windows provided a dazzling view of the Tokyo cityscape. There was even a grand piano and a balcony with a second dining area.
"It's nice, isn't it?"
Asher came up beside me as I stared out at the sea of lights below us.
"Makes me want to watch Tokyo Drift again. Do you think Sloane will consider that stepping foot near a sports car?"
Exasperated laughter erupted from my lips. "Don't even joke about that. She will actually castrate you, you know, and she'll spin it into a good PR move too. She's terrifying." He grinned.
"That's why I pay her the big bucks. She puts up with a lot of shit from me."
Mm-hmm. I could only imagine. Being a celebrity publicist sounded like the most stressful job ever. Like your car crashes over the past few years? I didn't ask the question with the intention of being combative. It came out soft, almost hesitant, but the ease with which it escaped proved it had always been there, lurking beneath the layers of my denial and avoidance. Ash's grin faded.
"Yes,"
he said after a long pause.
"Like the crashes."
We'd avoided the topic all summer, but Sloane's warning had ripped my layers to shreds and bared the 10-ton elephant in the room. My hang-ups about cars and driving were known quantities. That was why Asher hired Earl to drive me to training every week, and why he was careful to stick to the traffic rules when I was with him. But I didn't know what he was like when I wasn't there. Was he the same guy who made headlines for destroying his Ferrari in an illegal street race with another footballer? The one whose off-pitch antics fed into the controversy of his transfer because people worried his recklessness would eventually catch up with him and screw the whole team over? I hadn't asked because I hadn't wanted to know the answer. But the question was out there now, and there was no taking it back. Sloane's warning about staying away from sports cars. My next words stuck in my throat before I forced them out. Is that a general warning, or do you still race? I hated doubting him, but I had to know. Even racing in official competitions like Formula One was dangerous, and those had safety measures in place. I'd seen footage from a few illegal street races. They were the Wild West, and the likelihood of injury or arrest was even higher than in sanctioned racing. Asher stilled, his throat bobbing with a hard swallow. Tension coated the air like oil spilled over water.
Not often,
he said.
I haven't done it in a while.
When was the last time you raced? I didn't want to turn our first night in Japan into an interrogation, but I'd already opened Pandora's box. We might as well see it through to the end. Shadows flickered in his eyes.
Earlier in the summer. Early July.
Early July. Barbs hooked into my throat. That was more recent than I'd anticipated. It was before we officially got together, but it was around the time of our first kiss.
Does it bother you?
Asher asked quietly.
Me racing?
I tried to wrestle my thoughts into some semblance of coherence before I answered. I knew he loved the thrill, and I didn't want to take that away from him, but every time he got behind the wheel, he put his career and his life in danger. Could I really sit by and let him take that risk without pointing out the dangers? He'd been lucky so far, but all it took was one stroke of bad luck to end everything. I knew that better than anyone. It worries me, I finally said. Regular driving is dangerous enough. Accidents happen every day, but cars are an essential part of modern life. It's a risk we have to take. Street racing is more than that. My voice sank into a tremulous whisper. I don't want you to get hurt. I don't want what happened to me to happen to you. I don't want you to lose your dreams or die. The word wedged in my chest and clung on with bloodied nails, like it was trying to hide from the inevitability of its own passing. I couldn't imagine a world where Asher didn't exist, where I didn't hear his voice teasing me or see his smile beckoning me from across the room, where his heartbeats didn't sync with mine when we fell asleep, and where I didn't have a constant safe harbor in the storm. I couldn't imagine a me without him, and that terrified me more than anything else. Tears stung the backs of my eyes.
Scarlet.
Asher sounded anguished as he pulled me into his chest.
It's okay. I'm okay. Nothing's going to happen to me.
You don't know that. The tears trickled down my cheeks. God, this is humiliating. I was ruining our first night overseas together, but I couldn't stop. I'd spent years running from my fears, but the prospect of losing him was so overwhelming that I couldn't outrun it. It swamped me, dragging me under waves of anxiety and horrible bloody what-ifs. I raised my head to look at him. I used to think I was invincible. I was young and healthy and on top of the world. I thought nothing could happen to me, but I was wrong. Emotion clogged my throat. The thing is, I couldn't have prevented my accident. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that's up to the universe. But street racing, you're choosing to put yourself in that position. Asher's face crumpled.
Darling.
No. I shook my head and wiped my tears with the back of my hand. Please let me finish. I know you love racing. I do. I don't want to discount that, and I don't want to tell you how to live your life, but I can't wake up every day wondering if that's the day your luck runs out and I'll get a call saying you're gone. My words cracked. Can't lose you.
You won't.
His voice sounded thick, or maybe that was the weight in my chest talking.
You won't because I won't race anymore. I don't need it, but I need you.
Another sob bled out, formed of relief and a dozen other feelings I couldn't name. When I was younger, my friends and I tried to guess what our future partners' professions would be. I didn't care much at the time, but I was adamant about not dating anyone in emergency services. No firefighters, no police. No one whose job involved them running headfirst into danger for a living. In theory, a footballer should be safe. But there was nothing safe about my feelings for Asher. Maybe I was selfish for asking him to give up something he loved. If that was the case, then so be it. I would rather be selfish with him alive and healthy than selfless with him buried beneath the ground. Asher tightened his hold on me.
I won't race anymore,
he repeated.
I promise. Chapter 36. Asher. I should have felt more conflicted after I promised Scarlett I would stop racing. Getting behind the wheel had been my version of therapy for so long, so giving it up should have engendered some resistance. Maybe that had come the next time I heard about a race or got a message about a new Bugatti from my car guy. In the meantime, I felt nothing. Nothing except regret and a fierce, yearning desire never to make Scarlett cry again. I had no idea she felt that way about my racing, but I should have known. Her past with cars made our conversation that first night in Tokyo inevitable. On the bright side, it meant everything was uphill from there. Don't get me wrong. My schedule for the next 3 days was brutal. Aoki Watches had me booked back-to-back with promo shoots, press, meetings, and events. Sloan kept me supplied with coffee, but the jet lag and early call times kicked my ass. Thankfully, everything with Aoki went smoothly. The brand was happy, Sloan was happy, and Leon was happy from his luxury apartment in London, the bastard. My business manager had somehow weaseled his way out of the grueling cross-continent trip. Work consumed my days, but the nights were mine, and I spent them all with Scarlett. It was during the nights that I took her to my favorite izakayas, where we stayed up late talking over drinks and snacks. We wandered through the temple precincts of Sensoji, its illuminated lanterns casting a pale orange glow over our intertwined hands, and indulged in rousing renditions of old 90s songs in one of the city's many karaoke bars. Note, singing along with cooking was not one of Scarlett's strong suits. Exploring Tokyo with her was a revelation. As much as I loved London, I loved being away from the prying eyes and whispers even more. Here, amidst the electric hustle and bustle of the biggest city in the world, we could be a normal couple. No disguises, no nerves, no hiding from paps. Just us. My last shoot with Aoki Watches wrapped early. It was Saturday, so no one wanted to stay on set too long. While Sloan hung behind to double-check the details, I took Scarlett on a special date I'd planned with the hotel concierge's help. I couldn't join her on her daytime tourist excursions, but I could make sure our last night in Tokyo was as memorable as possible. I hope you don't mind heights, I said, opening the door to the hotel's rooftop. Scarlett stopped dead in her tracks.
Asher!
Laughter and shock laced her words.
Tell me you didn't.
She had to shout to be heard because waiting less than 10 feet away, its rotors whirring, was a sleek white helicopter with the hotel's gold logo stamped on the side. Private sunset helicopter tour of Tokyo, I said with a grin. Seems like a fitting way to celebrate our last night here. I paid an arm and a leg to book the helicopter at the last minute, but it was worth every single penny to see Scarlett's enraptured expression as we soared over the city. I was so used to the luxuries in my life that I sometimes took them for granted, but experiencing them through her eyes did something to my soul. I couldn't describe what it was, but I wanted to give her every good thing in the world. That's Odaiba, I pointed out the popular entertainment hub located on a man-made island in Tokyo Bay. We were there the other night. There's Shibuya, the Tokyo Tower. I'd taken this flight before, so I took over our pilot's tour guide duties until we landed on our hotel's rooftop again. The staff had done an excellent job of turning it over during our 20-minute ride. Instead of a large, empty expanse of concrete, the rooftop now featured a gourmet candle-lit dinner for two, complete with a linen tablecloth, fine china etched with a cherry blossom pattern, and portable heaters. The setup was tucked inside an alcove that protected it from being blown away by the helicopter landing. Scarlett's jagged inhale made me smile. I walked her to the table as the helicopter took off again to give us privacy. The rooftop was ours for the rest of the night.
Be honest,
Scarlett said as we sat down.
Was the heli tour inspired by my joke about a similar ride over Hawaii?
I have no idea what you're talking about, but hypothetically, if it was, it's a lot better than Hawaii, isn't it? Amusement pulled at her lips.
You know that date didn't exist. I was baiting you.
I know. That's why I said hypothetically mine's better. Scarlet laughed and shook her head. Our omakase dinner was prepared by Japan's top chef. There was a 14-month waitlist for his flagship restaurant in Osaka, but Sebastian had pulled some strings and convinced him to fly here for the weekend. One bite proved why he had a 14-month waitlist. Every course, from the trio of tuna sashimi to the A5 Japanese Wagyu sirloin, was exquisite.
Oh, I'm so full. You're going to have to roll me back to our hotel room.
Scarlet groaned, but that didn't stop her from eating the last bite of her green tea cheesecake.
This has spoiled me for life. I can't go back to regular takeaway after this.
I'll make some calls and see if the chef is willing to relocate to London, I said with a laugh. She perked up.
You think he will?
No, but it doesn't hurt to try.
Don't get my hopes up like that.
Scarlet sighed and took a sip of her sake. She glanced around, her expression turning wistful. Dusk had deepened into the full inkiness of night, and we were so high up that we couldn't even hear the traffic below.
It's so beautiful here. I wish we could stay longer.
Regret twinged in my gut. We were flying back tomorrow so we could make it to London before Vincent, but I wished we could stay longer too. We can always come back, I said. It's only a flight away.
I know.
She toyed with her silverware.
But it won't be the same.
I remained quiet. I knew what she meant. I felt it too. The impending curtain call on our summer. Heavy velvet drapes descending to divide our lives into us and them. Once we told Vincent on Monday, our relationship didn't belong to just us anymore. It belonged to everyone else too. Everyone would have opinions. We couldn't escape them if we tried.
Before we leave, I do have something I want to talk to you about.
Scarlet ran a finger over the etchings on her fork and avoided my eyes. Okay. I strove for a neutral expression, but I had a feeling I knew what she wanted to discuss. We'd agreed to an exclusive non-relationship when we started dating. We basically were in a relationship, but she didn't want to be hemmed in by the label, so I hadn't pushed the issue. However, if we were telling Vincent about us soon, it would make sense to redefine our status, right? My heart crawled into my throat while I waited for her to continue. Scarlet finally met my eyes, her expression alive with nerves.
I know we've been dating without a real label, but it's almost the end of summer, so I was thinking we could maybe make it official. It would be easier when we're explaining things to Vincent.
She rushed out.
To tell him we're boyfriend and girlfriend instead of this weird non-boyfriend and girlfriend thing we have going on.
Scarlet, I placed my forearms on the table and leaned forward. Do you want us to be official because of Vincent, or because you want to? My question hung in the charged air, held aloft by the thundering beats of my heart. A second passed. Two. Then.
Because I want to.
Scarlet's soft admission dispelled the breath from my lungs. I leaned back, relief a cool balm for the knot in my gut. Then we're official.
Just like that?
Just like that. I looked at her, this beautiful, incredible woman whom I never would have expected would turn my world upside down, and marveled that she was mine. The universe knew what it was doing after all. I've been here since day one, darling. I was simply waiting for you to join me. Scarlet's smile spread so wide and warm, I felt it all the way in my bones.
I haven't had an official boyfriend in years, so this is exciting,
she said.
Does this mean you'll hold my bag and let me borrow your shirts to sleep in? Because men's shirts are always more comfortable than women's, for some reason.
The shirts, yes. The bag depends. If you have as much shit in it as the day we met, then no. I raised a brow. I'm a top athlete, you know. I have to conserve my strength. I laughed when she kicked me under the table.
My old therapist would be proud of me.
Scarlet slid her pendant along its chain.
She said healing wasn't just about closing the door on my past. It was about allowing myself to open one for the future, too. We worked a lot on my trust issues after Raphael. If it weren't for her, I'd carry a lot more resentment than I do now.
and noted the past tense of her words. You don't see her anymore. She shook her head.
Some people fold therapy into their daily lifestyle, but I got to a good place. However, I know I can always call her if I need to, even if I hate asking for help.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Ha ha.
She rolled her eyes, but she was smiling.
My parents weren't thrilled at first. They're old school. There's this stigma around therapy in their generation. But once they saw how much it helped, they were on board.
Curiosity wound through me. Scarlett didn't talk about her parents much. I knew they divorced when she was young and that she had a fairly normal relationship with them, but that was it. How did they...
deal with my accident?
She finished.
As well as they could, I suppose. But my mother was shattered. She was worried about me, obviously, but I think she was equally devastated about the end of my career. She liked having a prima ballerina daughter that she could brag about to her friends. My father moved to London for the first few months after the crash. Vincent was already here. They rallied.
Do you resent your mother for that? I tried to imagine how my father would react if I got injured and couldn't play football anymore. My blood congealed at the mental image. I'd checked in with him a few times since his heart attack, but it was always through my mother. I hadn't spoken with him directly since the hospital. However, it didn't escape my notice that he never reached out to answer my question. Your team or your son?
Surprisingly, no.
Thankfully, Scarlett's response drew my thoughts back to her. The last person I wanted to focus on during our last night here was my father.
I knew she felt those things, but she didn't act on them, if that makes sense. She didn't push me to try dancing again, and she was supportive when I became a teacher at RAB instead.
The wind blew stray strands of hair across her face, obscuring her pensive expression.
We all have ugly feelings sometimes. It's a part of human nature, but it's what we do with them that counts.
Every time I thought she couldn't get more amazing, she proved me wrong. That's a mature way to look at it. I'm sure your old therapist would have been proud of that too, I teased. She offered a flicker of a smile.
Maybe, but can I confess something?
Always.
Sometimes?
A smile dimmed.
I get so jealous of my students that I can't breathe. I want them to be happy, and I'm truly proud of their success. But there are days when I look at them and see not only the potential they have, but the potential I used to have. They have their entire careers ahead of them, shiny and untarnished, while I'm a has-been. It's the wrong way to think about things, but it can be difficult to live in the shadows when I've trained my whole life to be in the spotlight.
Her cheeks reddened.
I know this makes me sound like a terrible person. I'm their teacher. I shouldn't be jealous of teenagers, and I don't feel that way all the time, but on bad days, it can make me spiral.
They're human feelings, I said gently. Like you said, they're normal, and you're not trying to sabotage your students. You're allowed to feel what you feel.
I know, but it's easier to give advice than to take it.
Scarlett played with the edges of her napkin.
Emma, one of my top students, got the role of Sugarplum Fairy in the school's student showcase this year. She wants me to attend the opening night. The staff showcase is at the school, but the student one takes place at Westbury, and I can't bring myself to go there.
Westbury was one of the leading performing arts venues in London. I'd never attended a show there, but I passed by it all the time.
I was on my way to perform at Westbury when the other car hit us.
Scarlett said, her voice quiet.
It was also where I got my first rave review for my performance in Swan Lake. That review put me on the map. In many ways, Westbury is the ultimate symbol of my old life, and I haven't been able to step foot near it since the accident. It hurts too much to remember what used to be.
Her eyes were 1,000 miles away. And I let the revelations of the night settle around us instead of disrupting it with an immediate response. Sometimes, listening was a better strategy than talking. The remnants of our dinner had long gone cold. The hours stretched toward the obscenely late half of the night, but I hung on to each minute like it was our last. If I could have stayed on that rooftop with Scarlett forever, I would have.
I'm sorry,
she said after a long silence.
Every time we go on a date, I end up making things so depressing.
Don't be sorry. I'm no better, I said. Remember the time I brought you to Holchester and trauma dumped on you in my childhood bedroom? That was fun. Her laughter chased away the melancholy and brought an answering grin to my face. It's not depressing to learn these things about you, I said. I want to know you better, the good, the bad, and everything in between. Scarlett's expression melted into a different, softer smile.
Ash, Donovan, I was so wrong about you at the beginning.
Most people are. I'm even more handsome, charming, and witty than they could have imagined.
You forgot humble.
Obviously, that's a given. She laughed again, and everything else we wanted to say was communicated through our long, lingering gaze across the table. Our relationship was built on unspoken words. We'd gotten better at expressing them over the past 2 months, but there were still a few words that remained locked away inside me. 3, to be exact. I was saving them for another time, when the prospect of revealing our relationship to her brother didn't darken the horizon like a thundercloud. For now, I simply enjoyed my last hours in Japan with Scarlett and let the future take care of itself.
Chapter 37 Scarlett. Thanks to the time difference, Japan was 8 hours ahead of the UK. We left Tokyo Sunday morning and landed in London in the early afternoon. Our late dinner, early wake-up call, and the change in time zones conspired to confuse my body about what it was supposed to be doing when, so I opted for the safe option and slept for a majority of the flight. When we arrived in London, I went to Ash's house instead of going straight home. Vincent was joining us at training tomorrow, and I wanted to say goodbye to our studio. It sounded stupid, but the studio had been our private little Eden for 2 months. It deserved a proper farewell.
How did he react when you told him we'd been training at my house this entire time?
Asher asked as I ran my hands over the smooth wood bar. I winced. He didn't. He thinks we've been training at RAB. Asher's eyebrows skyrocketed. I know. I dropped the bar and crossed my arms, hating myself for the lies piling up around me. The mature thing would have been to tell Vincent the truth. We initially changed studios because of the Paps, not because we were trying to sneak away for weekly rendezvous. But I knew my brother. He would flip out about me coming to Ash's house 3 times a week, every week without telling him, and that would put him in a bad mood for when we dropped our relationship bombshell news. I would rather rip off both bandages at the same time and contain the explosion to one instance instead of two. Plus, a small, selfish part of me didn't want to share this space with anyone else. It was a ballet studio, but it was our ballet studio. The Paps aren't hanging around RAB anymore, I said after I explained my reasoning to Asher. And people at the school aren't going to say anything. Even if they did, they don't know I've been training you at your house. So I told Vincent to meet us at RAB tomorrow like he did for our first session. The weight of our impending talk hooked into my stomach and dragged it down to my feet. My emotions vacillated wildly between anxiety and optimism, unsure of where to land. Asher and Vincent were finally getting along. Sort of. Our relationship news would either go much better than we anticipated, or it would destroy their fragile truce and bleed over into the upcoming season. No pressure or anything.
That makes sense.
Asher leaned against the bar, looking fresh and rested despite not sleeping during our long-haul flight. His eyes pierced mine.
So this is technically our last day together in this studio.
My chest twinged. I guess it is. We could come down any time we wanted, but it wouldn't be the same. I wouldn't be training him anymore, and the vibes would just be different.
Since it's our last day.
He pushed off the wall and closed the distance between us with 2 lazy, pantherine steps.
Let's make it count.
Embers of heat flared to life at his suggestive drawl. The air thickened, infusing oxygen with electricity that rolled down my spine like a hot, sensual caress. How so? My response sounded husky beneath the sudden crackle of attraction. Asher's grin was pure wickedness.
We've never christened the studio.
The embers ignited into flames. He was right. We'd spent so much time in the studio, but we'd never had sex here. It felt forbidden somehow, like we were defiling our workplace, even though it was a private residence. But it was that same forbidden undercurrent that stoked those flames higher when he gripped the back of my neck and pulled me into a kiss. It wasn't a gentle, yearning kiss. It was hard and aggressive, almost desperate, and the deliciousness of it made my toes curl. A moan slipped from my mouth into his. I was the good kind of dizzy, floating on lust and euphoria and everything in between. Asher pushed me against the bar and slid my dress straps down my shoulders. I shivered, my skin pebbling from a mix of cold and desire. I wasn't wearing a bra, and my nipples were so hard they abraded the light cotton of my dress. They scraped against the material with every movement, sending jolts of heat straight to my core. Asher broke the kiss and skimmed his mouth down my throat, his lips curving into a tiny smile when he found the wild flutter of my pulse. He lingered there, leisurely tracing his tongue over my skin before he continued his journey downward. He tugged on my neckline as he did so, and it wasn't long before my already slack bodice sagged around my waist. His mouth trailed down, 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 until it closed around a peaked nipple and sucked, teeth tugging and lightly grazing across the sensitive tip. This time my moan was closer to a strangled cry. My hand flew up and my fingers tangled in Ash's hair, both holding on and holding him close as he teased my breasts into pebbled stiffness. I was so wet I could feel my underwear getting soaked. I squirmed, trying to get more friction between my thighs when Asher lifted his head and spun me around so I faced the wall of mirrors. Heat consumed my face when I saw my disheveled, half-naked reflection.
Bend over and spread your legs.
Asher's rough command sent shivers streaking down my spine. I obeyed, placing my hands on the top beam of the double bar and edging my legs apart. My pants of anticipation fogged the glass, turning my reflection into a haze of dark hair and red cheeks. However, a needle of confusion pierced my lust when Asher walked to the sound system and turned it on. The familiar strains of classical music filled the studio, its elegant symphony a stark contrast to the obscene image of me bending over the bar, my legs spread wide, my breasts bared, and my thighs slick with my juices. My clit pulsed at the dichotomy. If any of my old ballet teachers could see what we were doing in this studio. Asher's steps echoed against the polished wood floors. He returned to his spot behind me, his gaze taking me in with such intensity that I blushed again.
The music is in case someone from the household staff wanders downstairs.
His velvety drawl slid over my skin as sure as a caress.
Wouldn't want them to hear us.
With that, he shoved my dress up around my waist, hooked his thumbs into my underwear and yanked it down, exposing the glistening evidence of my need.
Fuck, you're dripping.
He dragged a finger through the wetness. I whined and squirmed again, my entire body flushed. His chuckle brushed my back.
Does this turn you on, sweetheart? Getting bent over and played with while you wait for my cock?
I was too aroused to be embarrassed. Yes.
I thought so.
He removed his hand, ignoring my cry of protest.
You'll have to wait a little longer, but don't worry, darling.
A wicked grin slashed across his face as he knelt between my legs.
I'll make it worth your while.
That was the only warning I got before his tongue touched my clit, and my world splintered into fragments of pure lust. I cried out, my hands gripping the bar as Asher ate me out from behind. He lapped up my juices and swirled his tongue over my swollen clit before he thrust it inside me. The piano music mingled with the sounds of his tongue fucking in and out of my pussy in delicious rapid strokes. Firm hands manacled my thighs, holding me steady while I shook and sobbed, the pleasure so intense it brought tears to my eyes. He released one of my thighs and rubbed his thumb over my clit. He thrust his tongue deep inside me at the same time, and that was it. I exploded, my orgasm rocketing through me and taking possession of every single muscle while I drenched his face with my cum. He groaned, the vibrations sending mini shockwaves up my core before he pulled back and stood. I heard the metal rasp of a zipper coming undone and the rip of foil, But I didn't get a chance to ride out the final waves of my orgasm before he was inside me, filling me up until I gasped. I was still sensitive from our earlier activities, and the single thrust sent a second, smaller orgasm chasing after the heels of my first one. It was my first set of back-to-back orgasms ever, and I was so lost to the sensations, the want, that I could only hold on tight while Asher fucked me into a state of sobbing, mindless delirium. He was typically gentler when we had sex, but this was raw and hard and everything I didn't know I needed. We were swept up in the needs of the moment, our troubles drowned beneath an ocean of desire and expelled with each cry and groan. Still, despite the brutal rhythm of our coupling, he intermittently slowed down to check on me. I appreciated the sentiment, but I was fine in this position, more than fine. And I didn't want him to hold back. I wanted him to fuck me harder. "Right there," I gasped. "Harder, deeper, yes." His balls slapped against my skin with each thrust, underscoring the speed and force of his rhythm, but it still wasn't enough. I wanted more. Asher slowed again to accommodate me when I straightened, raised one leg, and stretched it out along the lower bar. I wasn't quite as flexible as I'd been before my surgeries, but the height of the bar and the way he held me alleviated any pressure that would have incited a flare-up. It actually felt good to stretch out my leg. Most importantly, the new position allowed him to fuck me deep. Deeper than any position we'd tried before.
"Fuck,"
Asher hissed, his body tensing at whatever sensations he felt. His skin gleamed with sweat, and his fingers dug into my hip as he drove into me again. He quickly matched his previous pace, only it felt even better like this. With me stretched out and him buried to the hilt, I squealed when he hit a spot he'd never hit before and my mind blanked from sheer pleasure. I'd never had sex like this before. Rough and unrelenting and passionate, where he fucked me like he couldn't get enough of me, and I knew for a fact that I couldn't get enough of him. It was the kind of sex that could ruin a girl for life. My breasts bounced wildly from the force of the pounding and my mouth hung open, unable to speak, unable to think. I was a sweaty, dripping mess, but I didn't care. In fact, it only spurred me on. It was so unlike me, so opposite the careful control that I exhibited in every other area of my life, that it was a turn-on. I didn't have to be Scarlet. Instead, I could be this wanton creature who dealt in pleasure and carnality, who could slip out of herself and enter a world of fantasy.
"Look at the way you're taking my cock."
Asher reached up and gripped my chin with one hand, forcing me to look at him in the mirror. To watch the way his cock plunged in and out of my drenched cunt.
"Every inch buried inside you, and your pussy still can't get enough."
I whimpered, my pussy clenching around him in shameless agreement.
"So fucking tight."
He lowered his head and sank his teeth into the curve between my neck and shoulder.
"So fucking mine."
Another, more savage thrust scattered any coherence that might have formed in my short-circuiting brain. I was nothing but a giant, raw, exposed nerve. Even the brush of air against my skin was unbearable in its sensuality. Add in the dirty words, the lewd sight of him pounding into me in broad daylight, with the innocent music playing in the background. And it was too much. The piano score hit a crescendo, and my third orgasm of the afternoon detonated from deep inside me. I screamed, waves of pleasure mushrooming from my core to engulf my entire body. My back bowed, and fresh tears pooled in the corners of my eyes as I lost all sense of space and time. I was 1,000 pieces of sensation, broken apart and put together again. My cum was still dripping down my thighs when Asher lowered my leg off the bar and turned me around. He sat me on the wooden beam and hooked my legs around his waist before he continued fucking me, his grunts growing deeper and more guttural as I convulsed around him. I was still flying high on the last wings of my orgasm when he came with a final deep thrust. His cock twitched inside me as he groaned loudly, the lines of his face drawn tight with pure bliss. The music was still playing as we held each other, me on the bar and him standing in front of me, our limbs intertwined in a sweaty, exhausted tangle during our come-down. That's one way to do cardio, I panted. Congrats, Donovan. You passed your final training test. His hoarse laughter vibrated from my head to the tips of my toes.
I expect a gold medal commemorating the moment.
Of course you do. I rested my head on his shoulder, closed my eyes and breathed him in. Some people were comforted by the smell of their childhood or their mother's cooking. But I was comforted by the scent of him. Rich, earthy, masculine. It was the scent of home.
How are you feeling, darling?
Asher stroked my hair. The gentleness of his touch a complete 180 from the way he'd just fucked me.
That leg on the bar move.
I giggled at the mix of awe and concern in his voice. I'm okay. The position wasn't uncomfortable and the lower bar helped. I lifted my head and gave him a teasing smile. That's one of the perks of dating a dancer. We're very flexible. His eyes glittered with relief and a fresh touch of heat.
I see that. Can't believe it took us this long to use the studio properly.
He shook his head in mock disappointment.
What have we been doing?
Less fun stuff, unfortunately. I sighed, drowsy but satiated. Oh, but it's a good last day, isn't it? Asher's face softened.
Yeah, it is.
We held each other for a few more minutes until our breathing returned to normal, and we finally, reluctantly, disentangled. We turned off the music, cleaned ourselves up, and sanitized the studio. But we were still holding tight to the day while it lasted. Because come tomorrow, everything would change.
Chapter 38. Asher. The next day, a heavy sense of déjà vu slammed into me when I walked into Scarlett's studio at RAB for the first time in 2 months. It looked exactly the same as it did my first day here, and memories resurfaced like vivid snapshots from the past. The bag, the realization that she was the mystery girl from the pub, the shock when I found out she was also Vincent's sister. The events felt like they happened both yesterday and a century ago. I'd walked in resentful of my forced training. Re-entered head over heels for my trainer. It was funny how one summer could change so much. Scarlett smiled, dazzled when she saw me, but it lasted only a second before her gaze drifted over my shoulder and it morphed into a more neutral version of itself.
Vincent, you're early,
she said a little too brightly. I dropped off my luggage and came straight here. Her brother strode in and hugged her. Look forward to seeing what you have in store for me. He gave me a curt nod, which I returned with a similar one of my own. Neither of us quite knew how to handle the thaw in our relationship when we were sober, so we kept a respectful distance while Scarlett turned on the music.
It's going to be harder than the wishy-washy workouts you've been doing on your own,
she said. Wishy-washy, Vincent sounded outraged. I have a great training regimen. Ask Men's Health. My interview with them was their most popular article last year. Second most popular. I bit back my reflexive response. My interview with them got 1,000 more clicks than his. Antagonizing him before I told him I was dating his sister later this afternoon was probably not a smart move.
Uh-huh.
Scarlett sounded unimpressed.
Either way, you're not caught up on the type of training we've been doing all summer, so I've modified today's session to account for that. The season starts in less than 2 weeks, which means we only have 5 sessions together.
She wrinkled her nose.
I'm not sure why your coach insisted on having you come back for so short a time, but it is what it is. We'll start with warm-ups and then go into the resistance bands.
I knew why Coach wanted Vincent to catch the tail end of our training together, even if it was only for 2 weeks. He was gruff and grumpy as hell, but he was an optimist at heart. He probably thought 2 weeks of forced bonding was better than none.
Also,
Scarlett drilled us with a hard stare.
The three of us haven't trained together since the beginning of summer, but my rules still apply. There will be no fighting or bickering in my studio. Understand?
I offered a laconic salute. Yes, ma'am. Vincent smirked. What he said. She rolled her eyes, but a tiny sprout of optimism peeked through her professional demeanor when we transitioned into our workout without a speck of argument. Scala paced the studio, studying our forms and adjusting us when necessary. When it came to football, Vincent and I were on par with each other skills-wise, but when it came to cross-training, I had the added benefit of 3 months' worth of dance-based practice. He didn't. I fought a smug smile when I breezed past our resistance and flexibility training, while he struggled with the movements. The muscles we used for dance were different than those we used for football, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't relish the way he fought it. Just because we didn't actively hate each other anymore didn't mean I should pass up an opportunity to, silently, gloat a little. Vincent growled something in French that made Scarlett sigh.
Okay, let's take a 5-minute break, hydrate, get your heart rate down. I'm going to use the loo.
She slid a quick look at me on her way out. Remember, be nice, it said. I am nice, my glance responded. We'd been careful not to make eye contact during our session in case we gave away our feelings somehow. We'd agreed to take Vincent out after training and ply him with a few beers before we dropped our bombshell on him. But I was having second thoughts. Should we ambush him on his first day back in the city, or should we give him time to settle in first? Silence hummed alongside the AC as we waited for Scarlett to return. I chugged half a bottle of water and glanced at Vincent. He was wiping his forehead with a Black Castle branded sweat towel. What are you doing after training? I asked, breaking the ice. Why? You planning to ask me on a date? I snorted. Ah, Dubois, I wouldn't ask you on a date if you were the last living creature on Earth. Not this, Dubois, anyway. Good, because I wouldn't fucking say yes. He tossed his towel back onto his gym bag. But I don't have plans yet. You fancy a pint at the Angry Boar for subbing in at the charity match? I added gruffly. Last weekend was to celebrate winning, so this is my official thank you. I don't like owing people. His smirk returned. So you are asking me on a date? Oh, piss off. Do you want a pint or not? I guess I could use one today. He patted his stomach. Can't drink like that after the season starts. I made a noise of agreement. We had to be much more careful with our diets during the season. Speaking of thank yous, Vincent glanced at the door. No sign of Scarlett yet. Thanks for listening to what I said at the beginning of the summer. His voice was layered with so much reluctance, it sounded like someone was forcibly dragging those words out of his mouth. My brows bent with confusion. About not hitting on my sister, he clarified. I admit I expected to come back and see you all over her. But you've been respectful and professional. And you punched that fucker Pessoa for touching her. So I appreciate it. His grimace indicated how much it pained him to admit he was wrong. But it probably wasn't as distressing as my knowledge that he wasn't wrong. You've been respectful. If he only knew. There'd been nothing respectful about what I did to Scarlett in the studio yesterday. Right, I coughed, hoping Vincent couldn't see the remnants of yesterday's activities stamped all over my face. He deserved it. I purposely didn't acknowledge the first part of his statement, but my muscles coiled with dread when Scarlett finally returned and cut our awkward conversation short. The rest of our training passed without incident, but when Scarlett tried to bring up the Angry Boar afterward, I stopped her with a meaningful look behind her brother's back.
I was thinking we could...
She trailed off at my wide eyes. We could what? Vincent asked.
We could bring things up a notch during our next session. I think you've got the hang of the basics now.
Scarlett said. Sounds good. I interrupted before Vincent could ask any more questions. Vincent and I are going to hit up the Angry Boar for a pint. Get some of that bonding time coach wanted us to have before the season starts. I punched him in the shoulder like we were long-time mates. He stared at me like I'd lost my mind. I didn't blame him. I was acting wildly out of character. But I was so jumpy from our earlier talk that I acted without thinking. If Scarlett joined us, she'd attempt to tell him about us like we'd originally planned. But I couldn't let her do that until I figured out Vincent's current headspace. Would the sentiment he expressed earlier make him more or less angry when he learned about our relationship? Unfortunately, I wouldn't have time to explain all this to Scarlett before we got to the pub, since she'd have to ride there with her brother instead of me. It would be easier for me to talk to Vincent alone first.
Oh, okay. Have fun?
Scarlett's questioning tone revealed her confusion about why I was deviating from our original plan. But she trusted me enough not to press the issue as Vincent slung his duffel over his shoulder and said goodbye to her. I'll explain later, I muttered when I passed her.
Looking forward to it,
she muttered back. She glanced at her brother's retreating back.
Good luck.
If I thought a one-on-one conversation at the pub would solve my dilemma, I was dead wrong. I figured I could ease into the possibility that I was dating his sister after a pint or two and gauge his reaction. But Vincent continued our conversation like we never stopped the instant we sat down, drinks in hand. I meant what I said earlier. He ran a hand through his hair. You and I haven't always gotten along, and I was nervous about leaving you alone with her. You're arrogant, you sleep around. Sounds like you could be describing yourself. Vincent glared at me. And I wouldn't want Scarlett dating someone like me, either, he snapped. She's been through enough. She has a bad history with footballers, and she doesn't need to deal with your bullshit after all that. I couldn't resist following up. By bad history, you mean Pessoa? He hesitated, then confirmed with a short nod. I'm not going to go into the details because that's not my place, but their breakup was hard on her. I never want to see her in that dark of a place again. She's my only sister, and I'm protective of her. My mouth thinned. Fucking Pessoa. I should have hit him harder when I had the chance. Anyway, that's why I'm sitting here, Vincent said gruffly. I don't give a shit about thank you drinks, no offense, but it does mean a lot to me that you protected Scarlett and that you didn't try to take advantage of my absence over the summer. So, I guess... He rubbed the back of his neck, his expression turning sheepish. Maybe we should let bygones be bygones. Like Coach said, I don't want our issues to fuck up our next season. And as much as I dislike you, I hate Holchester even more. What a ringing endorsement. That truly makes me feel all warm and fuzzy. Oh, don't give me that bullshit. You're not my biggest fan either. I most definitely am not. But I also hate Holchester more, so... I raised my glass. The truce continues. Vincent snorted but clinked his glass against mine. We sipped our beer and lapsed into awkward silence once more. We had plenty to say when we were rivals, but friendliness was a tougher bridge to cross than enmity. What's your problem with me anyway? I asked, genuinely curious. I would never forget what happened at the World Cup. Getting ejected from the biggest football tournament on the planet because of a faked injury wasn't something any player would ever get over, and England's subsequent loss only added to the sting. But it had been 2 years since that fateful call, and I was willing to leave what happened in the past for Scarlett's sake. Besides, I planned to kick Vincent's ass in the next World Cup. However, that didn't explain why he was so against me. We competed for sponsorships and status, but so did a lot of players. Was it because the internet constantly pitted us against each other in those who's the better player polls? Was it because I earned more than him? Or was it something else? My problem with you, besides the fact that you're a cocky son of a bitch with a superiority complex, Vincent asked. You have it too easy. I almost spat out my drink. Excuse me? Have it too easy? I trained and played just as hard as he did, and I worked my ass off to get to where I was. Admittedly, I was lucky enough to grow up in a relatively stable two-parent household, but having my father scream in my ear all the time hadn't been a walk in the park. Besides, it wasn't like Vincent grew up in a tough household. His parents were divorced, but from what I could tell, they'd been supportive of his dreams. His father had been an engineer and his mother was a nurse, and they had enough money to pay for Scarlett's ballet lessons and his football training. I'm not talking about your work ethic. It was like Vincent could read my thoughts. I'm talking about you, Asher Donovan. He gestured at me. If any other player had pulled half the shit you've pulled, with the cars and racing, they would be radioactive. No one would touch them. You, on the other hand, get a record-breaking transfer deal and a renewed sponsorship from Aoki Watches. You're reckless. You're flashy as hell on the pitch because you can't stand not being the center of attention, and it doesn't matter because your brand is too big to fail. I sat there, too stunned by the barrage to respond. I thought his issues with me stemmed from disparities in pay or fame, but clearly, they ran deeper than that. Vincent was quiet for a moment before he spoke again. Do you remember the Rocco campaign you did 5 years ago? I nodded. The sneaker campaign had been my first major brand sponsorship. When I received my first check from them, my eyes nearly fell out of my head. I was originally slated to be their brand ambassador. He flashed a bitter smile. But I got into a fight with Pessoa after the shit he pulled with Scarlett. Someone recorded it, and Rocco pulled my contract. I vaguely remembered hearing about the fight, but it happened before our rivalry truly kicked off, and I'd glossed over the details at the time. Shit, I grimaced. That sucks, I'm sorry. I wasn't responsible for Rocco pulling his contract, but if I were him, I'd resent the person who took my place too. Now I understood why my transfer bothered him so much. I got into trouble and got rewarded. He got into trouble and got penalized. Granted, we were at a different level of fame 5 years ago. Rocco might have let the fight slide if it had happened today. But feelings were feelings. Vincent shrugged. What's done is done. My Nike contract later soothed the burn. His mouth curled into a smirk. Besides, I was Rocco's first choice. Oh, piss off. But instead of being annoyed, I felt the tentative tendrils of understanding snake around us, softening some of our hard-baked bitterness. For two people entrenched in a career where ego and reputation ruled the day, that wasn't a small feat. But like I said, that's water under the bridge, Vincent laughed. I'm just glad nothing happened between you and my sister, or we'd be having a different conversation. I can get past work-related problems, but family? That's another issue. My short-lived relief solidified into ice. Scarlet. Letting go of our past resentments was all well and good, but our biggest obstacle for a friendly relationship continued to simmer in the background like a volcano waiting to erupt. Anyway, I'm glad we had this talk. Coach will be happy too. This time, Vincent was the one who raised his glass. You ready to kick Holchester's ass this season? I forced a smile and tapped my glass against his. Absolutely. We can't tell him yet. Scarlett stared at me from my phone screen. I didn't want to risk going over to her house after Vincent and I left the Angry Boar, so I'd video called her instead and explained why I changed our plans earlier.
What do you mean?
I mean, we have to rethink our strategy for breaking the news. I rubbed a hand over my face. You should have heard him. He mentioned multiple times how much he appreciated me not making a move on you while he was gone. That's one of the main reasons he's willing to bury the hatchet. If we tell him now, he'll feel like a fool, which means he'll probably take the news even worse than we thought.
Maybe he won't,
Scarlett said hopefully.
Maybe he'll take it better now that he doesn't think you're the devil.
I raised an eyebrow.
Ugh, you're right.
She dropped her head into her hand.
I don't believe this. We were nervous about telling him because he didn't like you, and now we can't tell him because he does like you. I swear, the universe hates us.
We can still tell him. We just have to adjust our timing, I said. 2075 should be an auspicious year.
Asher.
I know. I sighed, conflicted. On one hand, we could stick with our original strategy and deal with the fallout as it came. That would give Vincent time to calm down before the preseason started. On the other hand, I doubted 2 weeks would be enough of a buffer period for him to get over the news. He would start the season with fresh hatred of me, which wouldn't be good for anyone involved. Old me would have chosen option one, but I was trying to be more thoughtful and less reckless about the decisions I made. I couldn't jump into a situation head first and expect everything would work out in my favor. I had to think of the consequences. I also wasn't stupid enough to call Coach's bluff. He would absolutely condemn us to the bench if he felt like we weren't working together well enough. And I hadn't worked this hard to sit on the sidelines during what I was starting to think of as my redemption season. If I didn't bring home a championship come May and prove my critics wrong, I might as well pack up my boots and call it a day. Plus, and I would never admit this out loud, my truce with Vincent had lifted a huge weight off my shoulders. Clashing with someone on my own team took a lot of energy, and I needed every spare ounce of it if I wanted to beat Holchester. Maybe we can tell him during the holidays, I said. The spirit of giving and all that. Scarlett gave me a dubious look.
You want to tell him halfway through the season and ruin his Christmas?
Well, not when you put it that way. We sat in silence as we attempted to workshop a new strategy. It didn't work.
Maybe it's because it's so late, but my brain is mush,
Scarlett said.
We can table this for now, but is it really better to tell Vincent after the season starts than before? What if he finds out before we're ready? He'll be even more upset if he hears about us from someone else.
I don't know. I tipped my head and stared at the ceiling, wishing it contained the solutions to our problems. I really don't know.
Chapter 39. Scarlet. Turn, turn, plié, step back. I was practicing for Lorena alone in my studio. I went through the motions well enough, but I found it hard to focus the way I should. Asher and I never figured out a new strategy for telling Vincent. At this point, we were winging it and hoping the right moment would come up in conversation, which wasn't really a strategy at all. But it was all we had. Thankfully, Vincent didn't suspect a thing. After his angry boar outing with Asher, the two developed a wary but burgeoning, well, friendship might be too strong a word. It was more like a friendly acquaintanceship. Whatever it was, it meant the rest of our training sessions passed by smoothly. I'd hyped up the drama of Vincent's return so much in my mind that the ease with which he transitioned back into our lives was almost unsettling. However, as the days wound down toward the start of the season, my anxiety took flight again. Everyone would be back in London, which meant more eyes on us and more opportunities to get caught. I understood and even agreed with Asher's reasoning for postponing our big talk with my brother, but my mind couldn't stop chasing down every scenario where things might go wrong. What if someone captured a photo of us on the street and uploaded it online the way they did with Clive and me? What if Vincent ran into Clive himself and the rugby player exposed us? I hadn't talked to him since I told him we wouldn't work after our double date, but I knew he and Asher didn't get along. What if Vincent found out about the private ballet studio or our trip to Japan? I managed to keep the Asia trip a secret from my brother because it was so short, and I'd blamed my delayed replies to his texts on my busy schedule. But all it took was one slip-up or errant picture on the internet to blow our cover. Part of me wished Asher and I had been honest from the start, but it was too late. We were stuck in a web of our own design. My worries and disjointed thoughts jumbled in my head. I was so distracted that I missed